Turn to the book of Matthew, chapter 20. Matthew, chapter 20. And David, you can read Matthew 20, 25 through 28. Matt Hepburn, Matthew 20, 21.
Chapter 37.
No. No. Okay. There you guys. Edgar, read Luke 9:46. IL, Matthew 20:24. Devin, Matthew 20, verse 26 and 27. David, or Daniel, John 13, 4 and 5. Phil, Acts 9, 36. Will, read Luke 17, 7 through 10. And Johnny Guzman, Luke 16, 10. An interesting article written by a former Navy SEAL. And in the article, he just simply asked the question, who is it who makes the SEALs? You know, only 10%, roughly a little over 10%, can even survive the training. It's grueling. It lasts for 6 months. There's a point in which they hardly sleep at all for a week, and they call it Hell Week, and on and on. So he's saying, who is it who makes it? And he says, not the people you think, muscle men and super fit athletes. He said, I have seen weak guys, short guys, guys that were scared and showing fear. They made it. And he said, the mark of those who make it is this, the one who says, when they're going through hell, how can I help the guy next to me? And he said, those are the ones who make it. The other guys who are in it for themselves, look at my muscles, look at how fit I am, they don't make it. How can I help the guy next to me? In the text that we're going to read, Jesus speaks about greatness. You want to be great, he gives the path of greatness. That's the lesson today, path of greatness, the path of greatness. Matthew 20, verse 25 through 28.
But Jesus called them to himself and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you, but whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many.
Okay, the mistakes of greatness. There is something in the heart of people, and especially men, that we want to make a difference. We want to make our life count. We don't want to feel that your life is over and you have made no difference or made no impact. So in the text, he is speaking here, whoever wants to be great, the word means larger in size, or actually importance is what it's talking about, or one who stands out. And he's not saying that's a bad thing. He says, and he's recognizing that some of his disciples, they want to stand out. In other words, they want to feel like they make a difference. Now, that of course can flow out of good motivations, that can flow out of negative motivations, but often it flows out of our desire for worth, which is God-given. There is something that God put in you that you want to feel that you have value or you have importance. Nobody wants to feel worthless. So you want to be great. He then gives a teaching, and a lot of Jesus' teaching was actually correcting wrong ideas. So he says, you want to be great, you want to stand out, you want to make impact. That's not a bad thing. But he says, the problem is you have wrong ideas about greatness. How do you get there? How do you become great? How does your life make impact? Three mistakes. Mistake number one is the idea that greatness can be given. Verse 21. Matthew 20, 21.
And he said to her, what do you wish? She said to him, grant that these two sons of mine may sit, one on your right hand and the other on your left, in your kingdom.
Okay, so what's going on here is that the disciples were arguing, competing for who is great. So what they had a brilliant solution. Many men, they can't say no to women. Let's get mom to ask. Mm-hmm. How perfect is that? Jesus, could I ask a favor? Sure, as thinking maybe a little direction, a little advice here. Could you grant, now notice that word grant, could you give my sons important positions? Sitting on the right and on the left. The idea is on the throne. So Jesus is going to be on the throne, and you are going to give my son important positions. And so this is a wrong idea that many men have, is somehow my destiny is in the hands of a man, that they could give it to me, that somehow you could just have a pastor say, hey, come here, and just suddenly I appoint you and you leap into greatness and destiny. Jesus is saying that is, you don't get it. You don't grant greatness. That's not how it comes. Number two, mistake number two, why were they asking for the right and the left? The mistake they made was greatness comes from attention. Think about this. So the idea was they believed Jesus was the Messiah. They thought he was going to set up an earthly kingdom. He's going to set up a throne in Jerusalem. Everybody's going to come. Crowds are going to come to see the Messiah. And when they're there, if we sit on the right and the left, people are going to go, who's that sitting next to Jesus? Oh, that's James. Oh, that's John. Would have been fun for them if Jesus granted it to see who got to sit on the right and on the left. The right hand was more important, so then they would have had another fight. So some people think that greatness comes from attention. I have no attention unless I have a microphone. I have no attention unless I'm on stage. So therefore, if people aren't seeing me, I went to South Africa and they were big fans of Tupac, so there were bumper stickers and t-shirts everywhere, all eyes on me, right? So this is the idea, if people are looking at me, somehow I'm great. That's a mistake. Mistake number three, greatness is about power. It's about ordering people around. I don't think I gave this, verse 25, Matthew 20, 25. You got it there, Matt?
Yeah. But Jesus called them together and said, you know that the rulers of this world lord it over their people, and the officials flaunt their authority over those under them.
Okay, the New Century Version, I think it says rulers of the non-Jewish, they love to show their power over people. In other words, this is some people have this weird idea that greatness is having a position where you can tell people what to do, where you can tell people off. And that is, man, I am great, man, I told him. That makes me somehow important. The funny story in one of our churches overseas, a man, they appointed him as the van driver for the impact team. This was his chance. It was the first time he was ever in charge of a van. And so when everybody got in, before they took off, he said, all right, now I'm gonna lay down the rules of this van. He told them they weren't gonna be chewing gum. He told them, we're not stopping for potty breaks. And he laid down. He was like, man, finally, I get to tell people what to do. He's very satisfied about laying down the law. He took off from the church parking lot. They came to the first traffic light. The doors open, and everybody jumped out. Wasn't quite as powerful as he thought. There's an old saying, he who leadeth and no one followeth is merely taking a walk. So if you have these wrong ideas, it causes problems. You will invariably, it makes you view other people incorrectly. So if you think it's attention, it's a power, you are going to look at other people and think they are competitors. It's all about attention. You're going to get vexed when someone else gets attention. Why is he on stage? How come he's pulling the altar call? Why is he leading the outreach? How come he gets to give the report? It'll vex you when they do well. People are clapping like, how many got saved? No way. That's great. They're clapping and he's reporting, not me, because you view it as a competition. Luke 9:46.
Then a dispute arose among them as to which of them would be greatest.
Okay, a dispute arose. Who's going to be the greatest? How would you even measure that? Right? I mean, was that, I prayed for a guy, his leg grew out half an inch. I prayed and his leg grew out 2 inches. I prayed he had no head. You know, I mean, what? How do you even, what a bizarre idea that is, that somehow I can just sit and talk. I'm greater than you. I don't know if you know that, but this is, it's a competition. Second thing, wherever you have wrong ideas about greatness, you have conflict. You wind up fighting with other people wind up fighting with you. Matthew 20:24.
And the ten had heard it, and they were greatly displeased with the two brothers.
Okay, they were greatly displeased with the two brothers. Because I know human nature, I'm sure they were vexed. Why didn't we think of bringing mom? That's brilliant. Because they thought that somehow they won. Because of Jesus Christ, can you drink of the cup? We love to drink. He's like, oh, you will drink. Right. It was the cup of suffering. I didn't understand that. But this is true. Wherever you have people who are trying to use ministry to achieve greatness, I guarantee they're fighting with someone. And I see it. It is just human nature. We're saved, but that carnal flesh rises. Conflict is the fruit of wrong ideas of greatness. Here's the second thing. Let's talk about the paradox of greatness. Paradox is a truth that doesn't seem like it should be true. It seems like it's opposite. And Jesus tells them here, he's not denying that there are great people in the kingdom. Right? He didn't say, so many people want to be great. Don't be stupid. Don't be great. Don't try to be great. Great just simply means value in usefulness. And Jesus understands some people, they are greater in usefulness. They are more useful. That's not a bad thing to do. But he says, your mistake is how do you get there? It's not attention. It is not power. He turns the worldly ideas upside down. He tells us how to become great, Matthew 20:26-27. Did I give that to you? Oh, was it Matt? Sorry.
It wasn't me. I was just trying to do it.
Matthew 20:26-27.
Yeah, it shall not be so among you, but whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. Whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your servant.
Okay, so he says, you want to be great? You want to make impact? You want to feel your life count? You can. How do you get there? Minister and servant. That's how you do it. Minister, we get our word, Christian circles, deacon. It's one who does menial service. That a minister around the house is someone who does whatever needs doing. Hey, the trash needs taking out. The drain is blocked. Things need to be straightened. That's what a minister did. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm taking out the trash. Thank you. Thank you. Servant is actually one who does the will of another person. In other words, how can I help somebody else, not me? So Jesus is saying, if you will not make life be all about you, you will become great. That's our problem, is that in our world, we are self-obsessed. Self-obsessed. People fall into the Grand Canyon taking selfies, for crying out loud. We are obsessed with self. If you will look at life and take actions based on what is good for God. Okay, it's not about I want, I think, and I feel, and I want. God, what do you want? That's what I want to do. You'll be great. And secondly, if you will say, what can I do that is good for someone else besides me? Jesus says, you will become great. There is a path to greatness. The way up is actually down. Go down and you'll wind up going up. That's a paradise. It's like, I want to go up. I don't want to go down. But that is the path of greatness. Three elements of greatness. Here's our final thought. So how will that actually work out? How do you become a servant? Number one, it's simply finding a need and meeting it. John 13, 4 and 5.
Rose from supper and laid aside his garments, took a towel and girded himself. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wash them and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded.
Okay. Here is God in the flesh washing dirty feet. Okay. So we're often looking for the deep meaning here. What was the significance? Why did Jesus wash their feet? Because they were dirty. That's it. They had dirty feet. They wore sandals. The roads weren't paved. Their feet were dusty. And you know, if you ever seen accurate pictures of how they ate in those days, if you kind of reclined, your dirty feet would be in somebody's face. Why did he wash? Because their feet were dirty. There was a need. Somebody needs to wash their dirty feet. Greatness is like that. There are so many things. Let's start with, you know, of course, in your home, in the house. If you found a need and met it, your wife would be very appreciative. In the church, there are so many things that need doing. Just you got to imagine a church our size, a building this size. There are a lot of things that need doing. Ministry. We have all kinds of ministry. There's just stuff that needs to get done. So Jesus says, you want to be great? Find a need and meet it. That's great. That's not exciting. There's no microphone involved in that. That's powerful. I think I told you some months back about when I was a disciple and we had a building with no air conditioning and it was like 110 degrees in the summer and people choose to go into public restrooms and give birth to things that block the toilet, and we didn't have enough toilets as it was. I'm gonna tell you, when there's a bowl of Gator in there and it's 110 degrees, it is not a happy day. Somebody need to clean that out. If we got to get the lady cleaners in there, that means no one can use a toilet. So there was a very exciting job that needed doing. Somebody had to reach in there and pull out the Boulder Gator. Oh yeah, this is exciting. You put a garbage bag over your arm and pray that it didn't get a hole. Okay, I'm still checking my fingernails. Second part of true service is doing things for the benefit of others. We are so self-interested. We're thinking of ourselves. Human nature is so flawed, we even do good things so we'll get something out of it. Right? You ever see this? Have you ever seen on the news, a video clip of someone who is taking a selfie of them helping the homeless?
Yeah.
Right? So I'm helping somebody in need. I'm donating money to, right? So what you're doing is good, but it's all about you. That's why you're doing it. True service is doing something for somebody else that you get nothing out of it. You don't get attention. That is something that is very, very powerful. Acts 9:36.
At Joppa, there was a certain disciple named Tabitha, which is translated Dorcas. This woman was full of good works and charitable deeds, which she did.
Okay, this woman was known for helping other people. That's a powerful thing. People sometimes ask, you know, how do I humble my pride? How do you be humble? Can I give you one? Here's one of the simplest things you can do. Do something good for somebody else and then keep your mouth shut. Because there's something in us, we want to help. I was helping a little old lady across the street the other day. It's like, how many of you know that sometimes good medicine tastes bad? It tastes nasty. Not everything is cherry flavored. Not everything tastes like bubblegum. Sometimes it's nasty, but you need it. Doing good without drawing attention to yourself is medicine for your ego-ridden soul. It's a wonder. It tastes nasty. It's no fun because you're busty. You're like, ask me about my day. Third thing is not being concerned with recognition, and that goes back to doing it for the other people. He says, minister, servant. They weren't performing for an audience, right? The guy, the minister around the house who went and cleaned the toilet, when he finished cleaning the toilet, the master of the house didn't say, let's give a standing ovation. The toilets are clean. Thank you, thank you. There's no recognition in it. Luke 17, 7 through 10.
Suppose a man among you has a servant plowing or watching sheep. Would you say to him when he comes in from the field, come at once, have something to eat? Of course not. Instead, you would say to him, get dinner ready for me and put on your apron and wait on me until I eat and drink. Then you can eat and drink. He doesn't praise the servant for doing what he was commanded, does he? That's the way it is with you. When you have done everything you were ordered to do, say, we are worthless servants. We have done only what we ought to have done.
Okay. So this is servants. Servants in those days, Jesus is pointing out, they didn't get praised. I did my job. Can you give me a clap offering? No, you're supposed to do that. That's an element of service if you do it not for recognition. Now, this is a paradox. Invariably, people who do right not for recognition wind up being recognized. It's all motivation. So here's the power of service. Number one, God's will is accomplished by servants. Imagine what a church would be like if we had a church full of servants who just meeting needs, quietly doing right, blessing other people because it's right, not being concerned with ego recognition. That would be incredible. And then God can choose servants for larger tasks because they were trusted. Joshua, the servant of Moses, Elisha, the servant of Elijah, you know, David served Saul, on and on and on, is you have people who God was able to choose them for something larger because they started in service. And that is how the kingdom operates. That's the path of greatness. Okay, let's open for questions. Something you want to ask about this. John?
So with what you just said, I don't know, I think it's a good... I just thought of Samson and all the gifts, everything. But it was all about Samson. And I don't know, it's not a question, but I just a comment,
yeah.
I guess.
Comment. Okay, questions. Ayel.
You mentioned the minister and service.
Uh-huh.
What, can you expand on the like the distinction between those?
Well, they were both they both kind of could function the same way. I think minister in the sense that Jesus is talking about was someone who worked in the house. That was often, that was their job. Servant, some translations say slave, that often would be outside the house. That would kind of be the distinction. But they actually are, they're two, just two different ideas of the same thing. That would be. But that's a, yeah, so you had someone who ran the house. How do they run the house? And then you have those who work outside the house on the greater goods. That could be a possible distinction. Yep. Somebody else?
Thinking about children, kids, because you just mentioned a minute ago, like, the servants did what they're supposed to do. You know, they don't get praised. But that's different for kids, right? You can praise them for doing good things.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, eventually they're going to grow up. They're not going to... Do you think that sets a precedent? They're going to expect to be praised?
No, I don't think you're going to ruin kids by showing appreciation and value. Nor does that mean that you shouldn't praise or thank someone for doing right. What Jesus is saying is, you have to do this.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of what somebody else is going to do for you. So in one sense, children have to have, they have to have expressions of worth. I love you, thank you, I appreciate you. Those are things that are important in forming identity in who you are. In truth, Phil, someone who is raised with that in a normal atmosphere, they will have less hunger for, I have to have everybody praise me. Because it forms a healthy... When you have to have other people praise you, it's because you haven't found your own worth yet.
Oh, so the kids doing it and getting praise causes them to feel good about doing things, and then when they're adults, they kind of do it on their own.
It does... Feeling good about doing things, it's actually feeling good about who you are.
Yeah.
That's the principle of identity.
Okay.
So now the balance of that is you don't, there has to be, of course, correction. You have parents who everything you do is wonderful and they never get corrected. That's unhealthy. Mm-hmm. That's an imbalance because that's not how life operates, right? Your boss doesn't say, you didn't show up, you lost us a ton of money, well done, right? So there's correction, but you should never be afraid of praising, blessing, speaking words. That's the principle I think I preached on Father's Day, Mother's Day, Father's Day, probably Father's Day, about that. That there is words of value. You need to speak that to them. But again, back to your original question, this is not talking about you can't receive praise. It's talking about your motivation in doing it.
Internal.
That's right. And so, as I said, when you find a servant, other people invariably do wind up praising them. Like Dorcas we read earlier, Tabitha, is she was known for. Barnabas, the son of encouragement. He did good things and blessed people. So people praised him. But if your motivation in life, I am going to make people praise me, that's unhealthy. Mo?
You were saying being a servant is finding a need and meeting it.
Uh-huh.
Does that also relate to business?
Everything. So you're in you can't say I will only be a servant in one area, right? So this is marriage. You get married, it is, how can I bless my wife? How can I help her? What is it that she needs? On the job, that's true, working a job. Valued employees are people. You know, what I say, I normally tell concert directors, when they first start, step one of usefulness is follow directions. This is what I want you to do. Okay, you should do this because you follow directions. You become more valued when you move beyond directions. What needs doing? Because there are some people that this is my experience with unions. Is there's a union mentality that's not in my my job description. There are things like there's a package blocking, none of us can get out. Nope, that's not in my job description. I can't do it. Okay, but it needs doing. So there you have that mentality. How can I? And what you find is that bosses value people who find needs and meet it without being asked, without being forced or told. And then, of course, in the church as well, yeah. It's a mentality all of life. How can I be a blessing to other people? Yeah.
In a pioneer setting, when are you looking for guys that are, like, making themselves available, looking to be, you know, some signs of usefulness, and then, okay, I'm going to, like, use this guy to, I don't know, like, oh, my... have you usher, you know, or something like that. Is that what you're trying to identify?
Yeah. But again, we discussed this at breakfast. I think it was a question yesterday about inspiration. You don't get guys to get involved, serve, and help based on pressure. You got to help out. You're creating a dynamic of why are we here? Why do we witness? Why do we have church? Everybody has a part in this, right? If you're doing that, you'll have people that want to. I am asked a question sometime that people, as I travel, I get people at all different levels. And this is a common one. Do you ever have trouble getting people involved in ministry? Never. I have never like, man, I can't get anybody to help. And I think the reason why I got from my father is I am ministering vision. I am not ordering from on high, you lazy slugs better help out. You're giving. Like in the memorial song, I'm talking, man, little old, what a fellowship we're involved in. Little old ladies can participate in reaching the world. We're in this together, right? That makes people want to get involved. So yes, then you are, you're not going to appoint a guy. I want you to be a Bible study leader. You've been a lazy slug and never helped pick up a chair. You've never helped in any way. I would like to make you a pew captain and give you a title. No, it's not. But there's something about when. And then when you're a worker, other people that want to work too. So yeah, I've never had problems with people wanting to get involved. It's an approach, Matt.
What do you think his intention of giving the key to doing greatness for their lives was? He saying like, this is something that God put in you, and so this is how you exercise it, or is it more like an eternal thing? Like, I want you to aim for greatness. You're on earth with what you're doing, with eternity. What was his reason to saying like this is...
Well, okay, so think, first of all, Matt, when you're looking at a scripture, you're looking at one slice of all teaching, right? So you can't take this greatness as one isolated lesson, right? He told them, fishers of men, your life's impact on other people. Now he's talking, this is one slice here of... how you do that is service. That's how you're going to make impact on other people. So you got to put all the teaching together. So you're in everybody, you're trying to give them a larger vision of their life. That's what you want. You want to connect people. That's why you are in every single thing in the church. It needs to be vision based. That's what I try to teach these pastors when they ask me questions. There's two approaches to evangelism. You need to get your butt on outreach and stop being a lazy slug. There are women that are better men than you are. You could do that. It has a limited shelf life. or you're given vision. You understand here? I tell stories about the guy, you know, the guy in Australia that he prayed with the old man from India on the train platform, the sinner's prayer, and the guy began to weep. He said, I was waiting for the next train to jump in front of it. Your life can literally say he saved him from hell. That's inspiration. Think about this. This person, they grew up in a broken home. Their parents had a broken home. And now these people, look at their children who are saved, raised. You've changed their life forever. That's inspiration. All of it. Now you are, okay, when people are, I want to be a part of that. When you're giving people a larger picture, they will start to get involved, but human nature is involved. So now it's like, yes, I want to save people's lives as long as I can save more than David. That's just human nature. So now he's like, listen, greatness, he's not rebuking the desire for greatness, but it's connected to everything else. He's saying, let's talk about how to get there. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. And do you think it's something that God wants them to have greatness?
Or absolutely. Yes. So to again, his version of greatness, not ours. For us, our version of greatness is I have more likes, more hits, more attention, more microphone time, more fame. That's how we view it. That's not what he's talking about. So you can have someone who never, we have people that will never be on stage ever, one time in their whole life, and yet they are great. They stand out according to this definition. They find needs and meet it. Our church runs on great people who never get microphone time, right? And think about this. We got people that take vacation time to help other people in the parking lot. That's amazing to me. But that's vision. What are they doing? By doing that, you're enabling other people's lives to be changed. That's fantastic.
You said vision's in everything? Did I hear you say
that? I didn't say what?
Did you say vision is in everything, like we do?
You should. It should be.
Can you explain that? Can you explain how that...
I'm saying in everything that I am wanting people to do in the kingdom of God, it needs to be vision-based. There's a reason why we do what we do. Mm-hmm. Everything. I'm giving people, that is, you've heard me a number of times, I'm going to do it again this morning. What we do in the church is we're doing this together. Our lives are making impact.
So is that only for those in the church? Does that work well for sinners?
Well, it does work well anywhere. It doesn't matter. Business, sports, you know, right now we were talking yesterday, Deion Sanders at the moment. He's vision bait. We coming.
Yeah.
We're doing something. He's giving them a vision. We can do something great. And I'm predicting they're going to because he has them believing. That's vision. That's true.
Yeah.
But, of course, this is the kingdom of God. I'm not talking about how to build a business or a sports team. Yeah.
Yeah, but if you cast vision to a sinner, you know, that's kind of... Your life could be more. I mean, I know we're not trying to like say you can have a better life. I know that's not the gospel per se, but you could use some of that, right, in your
evangelism. Even in witnessing, yes. There are young men that you could talk. There's something in men. Men want their life to count. It's irresistible. And they are drawn to anyone who gives them a vision of their life becoming greater. That is the brilliance of my father. My father looked at hippies who didn't hold jobs, whose lives were a mess, and cast vision that your life could become greater. Why would anybody live in Prescott, Arizona? They were hitchhiking through. This is not a place you would stay in those days. There weren't jobs. There was no opportunities. Why would you stay here?
Yeah.
But he cast vision.
But you can't rest on that in evangelism, right? You have to do
it. No.
Okay.
No, but... You know, as we'll talk in the sermon today, evangelism should be varied. If you only got one string to your bow, you won't have much of a concert. So you gotta use different approaches. Matt?
When you were talking about sort of like virtue signaling, like people who want everyone to know all the great things they're doing,
mm-hmm.
selfies while they're helping people sort of thing, At my job, I work in a kitchen, so everything is dirty and gross all the time, and there's a lot of menial tasks, that cleaning tasks that need to be done constantly just to keep everything up to code and everything. And it's funny because there's been times where it's sort of our policy to, they like you to, you know, get a task done and then post it, like on our, you know, channel of things that got done.
Yeah.
And there's been times when I've thought that that's sort of like what you're talking about. I'm like, I'm happy to clean all these things, but I don't need like a bunch of, I feel like some people will often do things and it'd be like, look at all these things
that
I did. And so it's sort of my natural tendency to just do them because I work with a lot of teenagers who like to get a lot of attention for like cleaning out the fryers at the end of the day or whatever. And I'm like, that just needed to get done. Just do it. But it's also sort of policy so they can check off that got done. So
that's their policy.
I'd
say on your job you do whatever your bosses want you to do. So the point of what they're doing is they're, I think the point is to motivate other people who are image and ego based. So that's their job policy. So whatever.
So as a pastor, how do you distinguish between the two if you see two guys kind of rising up? You just ask God for wisdom, like give me the discernment between the two, or are there things?
Yes, I'm always praying. This is not a program. It's not a program. It's not personal relationships. I'm praying, but at the end of the day, cream rises. There's just no. You can have a crowd of guys, give it a bit of time. Men begin to rise, it becomes evident. Choose you out among you, seven men, full of the Holy Ghost, a good report, who we can appoint over this business. And they had no problem. They're like, I have no idea who to... Yep, it should be Stephen. It should be, whoever the other guys were listed there. So that's what happens over time. You just give it a bit of time and they will. You will be able to tell.
Okay. And then should you ever feel, as a pastor, should you ever feel pressure to fill a need when you don't really know like where to go or what direction?
That's probably a nebulous question, but one rule of thumb I try to give guys, I try to give pastors is it's easy to put anybody in, it's really hard to get them out. Right? So you can appoint a guy in 2 seconds. And he's in. If he's not doing a job or he's hurting you, get him out. It's not as easy as, nope, you're out. there's bad feelings and there's trouble and there's, So you do need to use some common sense. But not everything has to be crystal clear. Sometimes like we need it done today. You'll do. Okay, he didn't do such a great job. All right, we'll remember that next time. Main thing, Anthony, again and again, how many times, this is another question, and what is my answer? That's why I pray for wisdom. Every day, I start my day by praying for wisdom. God, guide me today. And it's practical. God, guide me today in counsel. Guide me in decisions. Guide me in your word. Guide me in your will. I'm asking. Those are practical areas. That's one of those. I need to know. Because it's very, I take people's lives and destinies, That's a heavy responsibility. So I don't take that lightly. And then not like, you're in, you're out, you're up, you're down. I pray about that. But if you pray, if you make seeking wisdom the overall aim of your life, instinctively you make the right choice. Remember I told you about when Juan Fifield wanted to go to Peru and it caught me off guard. I wasn't planning on that. I need somebody, and I'm asking Jet, like, who can we put in? I'm like, man, hey, why don't you ask Nate? I have no idea. It wasn't like the Lord said, Nate. I don't know. Ask Nate. Jesse, call him. I'm busy. It's probably Thursday of conference by that time. Friday, I don't know. No, Thursday. And so call Nate, and Nate says, you won't believe it, but I was there last year for the wedding. And sitting at the back holding one of my 16 children that I own. And God spoke to me and said, you are going to preach here one day. So it's like, man, that was God. Because I pray for wisdom. Right? That's like, you don't, I don't know at the time I make a choice, every single choice I make is the right one. But I see again and again, like, when he told me this, like, man, God is, he is really, really smart. That's my current joke with pastors. The longer I'm saved, the longer I'm in ministry, God gets smarter. So, clearly it's not biblically accurate, but you get the idea.
Would you say that, that a person will rise to his calling and it becomes evident, like if God wants somebody to be in a certain position, that
yes,
it will happen?
Absolutely.
Assuming that they do not disrupt the rail themselves.
That's right. Sin. Promotion doesn't come from the east or the west. It is out that comes from the Lord. He raises one up, he puts one down. That's God's in charge. You should never view this as my destiny is being held back by a man. My destiny is in the hands of... No, God's involved in this. That's why I pray to be in contact with the God who's in charge anyway. Sorry, you had a hand. Edgar?
So, I can have a hard time encouraging people that are doing a good job if I expect them to be doing a good job anyway. How can I better encourage others around me for greatness when you see them, you know, meeting things that they should be doing? Like, I don't want them to stop because they're not getting praise, kind of like what Bill was talking about. It's important to recognize and have gratitude, but how can I better encourage others to have greatness if I already expect them to be good?
Yeah, but the only time that it ever is counterproductive to praise people is if you are also never telling the truth, okay? So by the nature of the question is that you're, I am telling you how I was raised. It is not destructive to praise people. It's destructive to praise people who, if you never tell them the truth or to lie, because you never know what's going on in people. Yeah, you should do it. It's right. To say thank you, to say you did a good job, to say, you never know what's going on in people's lives. I don't know anybody who's like, I was going to do right, and then they thanked me, and then my head got too big, and I became a heroin dealer. No, I don't. That doesn't happen. It is not destructive. But what happens, you get people, yeah, they should do it, but you don't know what's going on in their life. They're struggling, they're people, you know, you get people that they're, man, I don't feel that I measure up. I don't know that. They're having this conversation in their head. Of course you should do it. You should do what's right. And if you never got thanked, you should still do right. I get that. But you don't hurt people by saying, thank you, I'm proud of you, you did a good job. That doesn't hurt them. And I've had times where it's just like, I feel impressed to say something good. And it's like, I had no idea what they were going through at that moment in time. Right? So I'm not afraid of spoiling people by telling them good things. Yeah. But I also have no problem correcting, rebuking when necessary, you know, directing them in a better way. So that's the other side of the coin. Robert?
So you're saying that kids that are raised that have a good sense of self-worth, this sort of thing kind of comes naturally. But what about people that struggle with self-worth? How does that...
What I'm saying is that people who struggle with self-worth they'll be more likely to be driven. They have a hunger for attention. It's like if you know, fathers, if you have daughters, you should hug them. You should tell them they're beautiful. You should show them value. You do not want some dirtbag in high school to be the first person who's ever told her that she's beautiful, ever given her value, right? There's a hunger, there's a hole that you create by not showing worth. That's what I'm saying. For boys who are insecure, there's something about words of value. There's something about hugs. There's something about words of appreciation. You're more comfortable and more confident. I can look at children and I can tell who has a dad who is involved in their lives. Because there's something, you're giving your children an advantage in life. Because there's not a hunger. I don't have this driving need for someone to give me worth because I have, it's been built into me. Now, the child, of course, they can do what they want with that information. Not every child responds correctly, okay? But I'm saying, if we take a pool of people, those that have received worth and value and affirmation, they're better off than those who do not. You see what I'm saying? Yep. Devin.
In doing things in secret, how do you determine, you mentioned Matt was talking about, just a policy, job, whatever it is, to encourage somebody else to do right? How do you determine when you should tell somebody something that God's doing in your life, or something for their sake, not necessarily to raise yourself up?
Yeah, I get. So there, testimony is a powerful thing. Clearly, I tell you stories of my own life. That is to encourage you or to give you reference points later on. But there also needs to be, and there are things I don't tell you. Right? So that's just a part of life. What I'm saying, it's medicinal to do right things and not be broadcasting to the world. That's medicinal. It's like medicine for the soul. That's healthy. But then there are other times when people need to know that. So that helps encourage you. Next time we have Boulder Gators here in the church, give me that garbage bag. Yeah. Good. Daniel.
So you can have an atmosphere where, I know in the past, I don't know, or some churches will have a testimony service, and you'll have just to encourage people.
Yep.
But then at the same time, you can have where you have, it turns into bragamonies in a way.
Yeah.
So what are the dynamics with those two different atmospheres?
Bragamonies are often, to me, are more people who usually, I had a guy that he would. In his testimony, or if he's telling you personally, he would tell you about how many chicks he screwed before he was saved. I was a real swordsman. That was his stupid comment. what a dumb. He's dead today. Not saved. Destroyed his life because he was a swordsman. That is exactly right. Destroyed his marriage. Stupid man. So I'm worried about guys who. Well, they're talking about their past and they're making it sound like that was the best days of their life. Right? So to me, that's a bragamony. I suppose you can, I suppose it's possible to be flaunting God's current blessings. Whatever. People got to deal with it. It's all good, Daniel. That's the point. Somebody does something that irritates somebody else, it's good for them. Everything that happens in your life is good for you, one way or another. Yeah. You often don't realize it at the time. All right. Thanks, guys.